Welcome to a special edition of the Texas Hour with Pratt on Texas, featuring an interview with a thinker, writer, doer, or someone with an interesting story to tell.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have the distinct pleasure in this podcast extra to bring to you a person who's been just become extraordinarily important in my life after the dirty dealings done me and my family. During that same 2-week period when the liberals out of New York and everywhere were canceling conservatives all over the country, heck, I wasn't even talking about the January 6th stuff, but it happened to us. And I own the network, but they pulled the affiliates. And, you know, one of the folks who just amazed me, because there were people who came forward everywhere who I didn't even know. I got phone calls from people in other parts of the state. Very influential people. Turned out they were regular listeners of Pratt on Texas. One of the people just impressed the heck out of me was Victor Flores, who is the owner of our affiliate in Lubbock, Walk by Faith Radio. Victor's primary business is another business, but his wife has a big background in media and does this kind of thing. And they bought this station for Christian music and all that. And all of a sudden, I see all these social media posts where Victor... A lot of other people, they want to negotiate behind the scenes. They want to talk and they want to. Victor's out publicly almost trying to shame me into bringing Pratt on Texas to his station. And of course, since then, we've become much better. We know each other much better. I wanted to do a podcast extra with Victor because I think in this time of politics, with all the media trying to always set narratives and tell us things that we know not to be true, or vice versa. Victor's somebody we need to hear from. Victor is currently the president or chairman or whatever title. He's the grand poobah of the Lubbock chapter of the Republican National Hispanic Assembly, a group that was formed by way back during the first Nixon campaigns and has been part, an official affiliate of the Republican National Committee, an official club affiliated with the party since way back in the early 1970s. And Victor is an immigrant to this country. He's Hispanic. His wife is Hispanic. You know, my wife is Hispanic. My wife is from Mexico, but I'm one of those old Anglo crackers, you know. So anything I say about anything can't matter. I mean, to the modern leftist, you know, it can't be true. Does bother me, though, when I hear people. But anyway, that's another story. I'm not going to go down that path right now. Victor Flores, welcome to the podcast extra on Pratt on Texas. I want to talk a little bit about you. Tell us about your family. You're from down in Chiapas, I believe, and where the Zapatistas, the revolutionaries and everybody were. At some point, your family came to the United States. You've become an American citizen, and you've chosen Republicanism as your political direction and party. Tell us a little bit about you and your family and where you come from and how you got here, and then we'll take it from there.
Okay, well, thanks for having me. But yes, right into I was born in Chiapas, up in the heights in the mountains of Chiapas. There's this town called Cintalapa de Figueroa, which is huge, close to a big river. Beautiful, beautiful place. Me and Letty had the ability to go back and see where you know
where she was from. Yeah,
from, absolutely. So then my dad and mom migrated to Ciudad Juarez, and I was raised in Ciudad Juarez.
For you Texans, as I always say, I say Ciudad Juarez, but that's Juarez to you. That's where he's talking about, across from El Paso, Juarez. There's people I've said Ciudad Juarez to over and over, and it dawned on me later they had no idea, both from the accent and the city, you know, word thrown on there and the pronunciation. They had no idea where the heck I was talking about. So I love to throw that in. That's Juarez, you know, where you used to go over to play, go to the dog races and go to the Kentucky bar, folks. So anyway, so yeah, your parents migrated up to the big industrial northern city where there's people from everywhere in Ciudad Juarez. Take it from there.
So that's where I attended school, and I was there till I was 11, 12 years old. This was about 5 years after my parents' divorce, and yeah, I was raised by my mom, single parent. So here's the thing. Now I'm in Juarez, and in Juarez there's not enough schools, So they have two shifts. You either go to school in the morning shift or you go to school in the evening shift. Well, luckily for me, I was the evening shift kid. So I didn't have to wake up early any day.
Oh, man, that would have been wonderful for me. I'm not a morning person. I would have loved that.
One day, I'm walking home as always at the dark of night, and we're leaving. We're coming to America, and I'm 11. I'm about to turn 12 years old, and that was shocking. That was a shock for me. So we come to the United States, and my mother started working. I started attending Matthews Junior High in Arnett Benson.
So okay, that's where, you know, when I got married, that was still where the language or the what did they call that program? It's the program for adults that the public school runs, where they have all kinds of stuff, extended learning. And that was no longer a junior high. They built Cavazos. But when we got married, that's where they were doing, you know, the English lessons and things. And my wife was self-taught. That's where she went. She spent lots of time there at that building in North Lubbock when we got married, just because she's always wants to be studying. You know, she'd already graduated university, but she wanted to be studying and always getting better. And she took the English classes. So y'all came from Ciudad Juarez in Chihuahua to Lubbock, Texas, and you're a junior high kid at this point.
Yes, I started the seventh grade at Matthews Junior High, and you know, I was an 12-year-old kid. I was really intimidated.
Well, now you had to get up early in the morning, too, because it wasn't the evening
shift.
Well,
number one, exactly. I had to get up in the morning. Are you kidding me? I wasn't used to that.
Me either.
But it was a culture shock. One, I didn't understand or speak a word of English.
Oh, so you didn't, I've done so much business in Juarez, you know, lots of the people there have learned. And of course it's changed a lot now with all the media. There's so much difference, but I mean, I can see that. I mean, you're in Juarez, I have relatives there now, and I mean, they don't speak English. Even though they're saturated with American media and things, and they do go across to El Paso constantly to shop, their culture, it's another country, it's another world, and everything's in Spanish. So you come to Lubbock as a kid, you don't speak any English.
No, and well, I mean, it's part of the curriculum whenever you go to school, especially in Juarez.
Right, in Mexico. It
was part of the curriculum, but I didn't like it. I hated it, to tell you the truth. I didn't want to learn it. You know, give me math. Give me something else.
Oh, you like the stuff that I hated. You like math and the stuff I hated. I probably would have enjoyed. You know, my wife has pointed out, and over the years, and we spent in Mexico and Central Mexico, and talking to other people, one of the big problems, and you see it here too, one of the big problems is that the teacher, they do require the foreign language. The teacher, though, who speaks, it's not a native speaker, and it's really not. They don't really know it themselves. And we've seen that in the reverse here. We've seen people who are Spanish speakers teaching Spanish, and they think because they speak this Spanglish, for example, that they're not. And it's very, very bad Spanish. So I can certainly see Isabel took a lot of these classes. And I think even in university, her first degree plan was languages. And she's told me about the difficulty. She taught herself. And I mean, here you are, you're thrown into the fire and you're going to have to learn it on your own. How did that go? Sounds pretty good today.
Well, the first year was pretty rough. Really, you know, I remember vividly the first day that I showed up to Matthews Junior High and this is a different planet for me.
Right.
Number one, everybody's speaking a language that I don't understand. And since I don't understand, you know, bullying goes back to first civilization.
Yeah,
so,
you know, somebody's different. That's where the bullying comes, right? Because they're different.
Yeah, yeah. So here's a kid that just showed up, and he, everybody thinks that I don't get it, or I'm dumb, or whatever. So, anyways, it was really tough the first year. But here's what happened: I started showing up every day to school. And they fed me every morning. And then about 11:30, the bell rang again. And I would go to this cafeteria and they would feed me this tray with awesome food. Probably that first week, I had been fed better than I had ever been fed in my life. My attitude changed because I hated it. But then all of a sudden, I became very grateful. And I became, to to take the positive and embracing it. And it just worked out for me. It just really did. But I really appreciated what I had never been given. I did not take it for granted.
So as you began to mature as a teenager and young man, did you begin to notice that the people around you, one of the deficiencies they have in recognizing the opportunities in the United States, one of the greatest challenges they have is they've never been without the land of plenty, because even our poor here live as good or as well or better than what we would call really good middle-class working families in Juarez, for example. And the other, you know, I'm not talking about the street bum, but that what everybody here, the white guilt people call poverty, I've noticed they live a lot better. They usually have a car or two. They live in a house. They live better than a good working class, middle class family does in Latin America. Did you notice that it was this knowing what it was like somewhere else that made a big difference to you that other people didn't see?
That's a privilege that I have, that I'm able to recognize because I lived it. I walked the path. I know what it's like to live in another country. I know what it's like to wake up there, you know, every morning and go to sleep there every night for my first 12 years, for that matter, the first 12 years of any individual. I mean, that is the base, that is the foundation of your life.
Yeah, it's the formative years. And so you get here, and to you, the thing that, I'll just be frank, the thing that locals made fun of, you know, the back, because we're talking similar time periods, the kids in the cafeteria that are going in for breakfast. I know schools now, lots of schools, lots and lots of people go in. I don't know if teaching dependency is a good thing or not. I have some real problems with some of these programs, but I do think that we used to sort of make fun of the kids that were in there because we didn't know any better. We didn't know how the world was. I mean, and we sure as heck had no right to have these attitudes because we weren't earning our living. Our parents were. We were just kids. But it did tend to be the poorest kids, and often at the time Spanish speakers and people who were working either in the migrant program and moving around, working farm work and that kind of thing. That'd be about all we'd ever see at the breakfast program and often over with the cafeteria trays. By the time I was in high school, that's about all the only folks who got the cafeteria tray. But, you know, from your perspective, this is a fabulous thing.
This is the best thing that's ever happened. I mean,
right. Eating regular sort of important Americans. Yeah, fat, overweight Americans, all, and you know, me included, all around us, and everybody that I see out there crying poverty and how unfair this country is, and I look on TV at their rally, and they're all 150 pounds overweight, holding the signs. Eating is sort of important, isn't it? Just being able to earn the money to eat. And we don't have this welfare state in other places in the world. As my wife always tells people where I'm from, if you don't work, you don't eat. And so you come to America and you immediately are plunged into a culture that's different. You don't speak the language, but you immediately see that this is the land of milk and honey, so to speak.
That is correct. And, you know, at that point, LISD at the time decided that they were going to take the kids from Matthews Junior High and take some to McKinsey and take some to Evans Junior High. In other words, they were going to do some mixing of the pot.
Right. There's that busing stuff and all that other crud anyway, instead of letting people be in the neighborhood in which they live.
I ended up at Evans Junior High and met a different culture, if you will. You go from one side of the spectrum in one town to the other side of the spectrum, and that was kind of another shock. However, it was very welcoming by everybody there, and probably that's where I really picked up my English. Young man at the time, Chris Carter, he was my best friend, and we just kind of hang out, and by hanging around, you know, just started hanging around with people that I could see good in them, and That's just part of really, you know, how
would
life
you
be. You hang around with good people and good things are going to happen.
Right, and the opposite's true, too, and our Bible teaches us. You hang around with the wrong people and you become like them. Let me ask you this. One of the things my wife has been... we don't talk about it a lot now because the left just keeps winning. And you know, then we're going on to the next thing and the next thing. But this this separating kids was a huge deal back when we got married. And it was one of the big political issues about not mainstreaming kids, basically putting them in separate Spanish language instruction through school. And of course, Isabel used to argue to them, you're not doing anybody a favor. You're just ensuring... I think the way I put it when we talk about it is you're ensuring that someone's deficient in both languages. And you know the culture in Mexico, it's a very stratified culture. And the moment you open your mouth and the way you speak places you in that society. If you don't speak Spanish well, when Texans go down there speaking Spanglish, they're really looked down upon. In English, if you don't master English, if you do this bilingual stuff, you end up with kids that don't really master either. It sounds to me like just jumping in and immersion to some degree worked very well for you. And the data seems to show that's the most effective format. But yet, for some reason, the left has not wanted to follow that model. Maybe because they think, oh, it's too traumatic. I don't know. Your thoughts?
Well, it's, you know, we're humans, but we're the best at adapting. Some people may adapt, some people may not. You know, I had friends that I even here that could that they just not adapted to the situation in language. Obviously, that's a big thing. I remember back in the 80s where speaking Spanish around people, that was not cool. I mean, you can't do that because somebody may not know and they would be offended. But nowadays, I mean, I went to Walmart earlier over there by Texas Tech, and there's a dozen languages being spoken around the store.
Right. Oh, yeah, all the time. It's still a matter of manners, though, not to speak in front of people something they can't understand. That's just manners. That's not cultural politics. Of course, the left has tried to make it that way, but you're right. I mean, it is different, and Lubbock is different in that Texas Tech has so many people from so many parts of the world. We've always lived in that part of the city and enjoyed that difference you have. There's a new African restaurant opening up near the Pratt on Texas compound, you know, and that's exciting. Stuff like that's fun. So, but did you think, though, that you would have learned English well if you had been shoveled off in some program where you just kept speaking Spanish in school? I don't see how you actually learn it well, except the way you said you hung around with people and you just absorb it.
Yeah, no. What worked for me is the fact that I was thrown into the, okay, here you go. You got to go to school, and you just went to school and you figure it out. Things were a little bit tougher. But some of them were international that you could make heads and tails, like science and math.
Right. And also, remember, folks, young brains work differently than old brains. Yeah, I'll guarantee you that not to me, of course, but Victor could learn a lot more, a lot faster when he was young than now. We're old guys now. Victor, let's take a break. We'll come back and pick up with your story in this podcast extra on Pratt on Texas here in just a moment. Stay with us, folks.
Pratt's interview continues after the break.
The name may be Specialty Trucks of Lubbock, but these guys have repeat customers across the country. Why? Because they save you serious money. Mike Crafton and Jason Duncan specialize in finding and reconditioning quality work trucks, including heavy-duty pickups, utility-bodied trucks, bucket trucks, and more. Specialty Trucks of Lubbock can get you the work truck you need and save you money. You can see inventory online at specialtytrucksoflubbock.com or request them to find the truck you need. Talk to Mike or Jason at specialtytrucksoflubbock.com.
I tell you, my heart really goes out to those like me who are self-employed.
Michael Hurley of Hurley Benefit Services.
Self-employed individuals have really been the very cornerstone of my agency.
If you're self-employed, you have a special health insurance problem.
I'm trying to help the individual out there who makes too much to qualify for any help, any subsidy or benefits from the government towards their health insurance, but does not have the income to pay the incredibly high premiums we find if you're buying your insurance individually. I'm a policyholder myself. I sleep better at night knowing that I have this coverage in place in a way that won't break the bank and allows me to keep my family covered if something tragic does happen.
Life, health, dental. With the innovative coverage offered by Hurley Benefit Services, you can have individual or group coverage that is a lot better, that costs a lot less. Hurley Benefit Services is independently owned, and they're online at hurleybenefits.com. H-U-R-L-E-Y benefits.com.
If you're sick to death of the mainstream news, we invite you to check out 21st Century Watch magazine. We cover developments we have no choice but to watch from a biblical perspective. Not only is it priceless, it's free. Call 903-561-7070 and 21stcenturywatch.com. That's 903-561-7070 and 21stcenturywatch.com. A little hope would be nice.
Now, back to the interview and your host, Mr. Texas, Robert Pratt.
Welcome back to this podcast extra from Pratt on Texas. We're visiting with Victor Flores. Victor owns Walk by Faith Radio in Lubbock and a lot of other businesses. He's an immigrant, and you just heard in the first segment. Comes home from school at night in Ciudad Juarez. He's from way down in the southern part of Mexico, in Chiapas. They had emigrated up to Ciudad Juarez in the northern border, across from El Paso, a major industrial town. By the way, if you're ever there, there's people from all over the world there. It's just a big industrial melting pot. But it's they speak Spanish. He went to school in the evenings, because you either go mornings or evenings. He comes home one night and said, "We're going to America." They end up like a spaceship beaming him up. He's all of a sudden he's in Lubbock, Texas, which the weather's not that different than Juarez, so that wasn't a big deal. But all of a sudden he has to go to school. And here he is. He doesn't speak any English. He doesn't read English. He doesn't know any of that. So he's starting seventh grade. We got to this point, and we know that Victor just excelled and did well in math and science, picked up English very quickly through the immersion technique, which I think is all that really works. And Victor, your life began to really change. I mean, you're no longer in the socioeconomic situation that you were in Mexico. Now all of a sudden, and this is what we're back in. You and I are not that far off in age, so we're back in the end of the Carter years, the Reagan years, and America's booming with this concept, and it was really new, the idea of entrepreneurship. And really the thing then was, not sitting around playing video games, all the young people that had any drive at all wanted to be out working, getting a career, starting it, whether they're starting their own business or not, they wanted to be working. That was where our pride was, having a job, making your own money, getting your own car, being able to rent your own apartment. Tell us about, because you're clearly a serial entrepreneur, as am I, and this, you just launched in this country and the benefits in this country. Talk about your direction there as you went on through high school and then got out of high school.
So I'm a Westerner, graduated from Lubbock High School back in 1987.
My God, I'm older than you. Man, I was hoping you were older than me.
Yeah.
I graduated Lubbock High School as well, but I only went there 1 year for 2 hours in the morning. Because I'm a Floyd Ada guy, but I left home, started a company when I was a teenager and needed to finish that diploma. And so Knox Williams, the great principal there that really got the honors program going, basically bent all the rules there were to enroll me there and let me go to school there. So, golly, it was fun to think of you as older than me because, you know, the big radio station owner. Oh, boy, you're the young pup. Okay, so graduated from Lubbock High School, which, by the way, a Blue Ribbon National School. It has an academics program that is out of this world and still is extraordinarily tops there at Lubbock High. So you graduated Lubbock High, then what happened?
So I'm going to go back to 1976 when I was in Ciudad Juarez sitting in front of the black and white TV at some neighbor's house watching the debate with Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter. Yeah. So I'm sitting there and I'm listening. I was intrigued by politics ever since then. So when here at the United States,
you were like me. I was watching that, but you were too little to know what any of that crap was really about. But
I didn't know what was going on. Me too, though.
I wanted to watch all. I remember listening to the Watergate reports. All as a little child, I didn't know what it was, and I remember one time at a house in Lubbock. And I'm almost certain it was the guy that eventually moved to Lubbock and owned Don Crow Chevrolet. Don Crow. They lived in Floyd, Ada for a while, and he had started there. I think I was at their home with their kids. Yeah. And his wife or somebody asked me, because I listened to everything, you know, well, what is this? What do you think this is about? And I remember saying, well, there's this big gate, and it holds back all this water. You know, I was a little kid, but my gosh, I knew the term, you know. Other kids had no idea what was going on. So you and I both, I guess, knew that there was an interest there.
I was watching it in black and white. They were speaking in English, but Televisa had somebody translating Spanish. Yes. So anyway, so I had an intrigue. So I had been following, and I followed when Ronald Reagan became the president in 1980. So I followed him. And then he's really the reason. He's really the guy. Whenever he signed IRCA, the Immigration Reform and Control Act, which then permitted for my family through amnesty to be here to forever. So I remember the day when he signed that. And during his speech, he said, you know, a lot of people may not agree, but there's going to be some people that will be grateful. Well, I'm one of them. There was 2.7 million, mostly Mexicans, that were that found a pathway to citizenship.
Well, Victor, there's 10 times that number now. There's got to be 30 million or more.
Sure.
This is a really tough subject for somebody in your position. Because this country is built on the rule of law. It's not like Mexico where they talk about the rule of law, but whatever the president wants, he's basically a 5-year dictator, and the Congress is a rubber stamp, as you well know.
Sure.
In this country, it's supposed to be the rule of law. If we don't fundamentally, if citizenship itself is not based on the rule of law, do we even have citizenship in a republic? And I want your thoughts on the whole issue.
Well, I'm going to be biased because I'm a
Benedictine. Of course. Victor, of course you're going to be biased. I mean, as you say, you're a beneficiary of that. But is that the right policy? Talk about this whole concept of amnesty versus pathway to citizenship, all kinds of things related to that, the DACA, all those things. I'm really curious to hear your views.
Well, here's what we have. That migration, especially geographically speaking, the people that's coming from Mexico, and of course, as you know, most of the people that come through our border are not Mexicans.
Not anymore. That's right.
The higher percentage come from other places, Central America, and really throughout the world.
Now South America, too. Yeah, but all over the world. You bet. A lot of Chinese, lots of folks from all over the world.
So, and I'm going to give you my straight perspective. When my family was moved here, and mind you, it was just really my mom moving here with her kids, with already a job lined up and people already connected, and it just kind of
She had a support community of some sort connected to.
Here's the thing, it was you know, if we can go into the personal view of my family. The divorce that she had with my dad was not good, and she felt persecuted, so she wanted to take her family elsewhere. The choices was from Ciudad Juarez, we're either going to move to Guadalajara, or there's a possibility that I might move to the United States. Well, she made the right choice. And so how do we fix that? The fact that the South border, it's open. And the South border, it's always been an issue. The South border is always going to be broken through by either cartels, people that mean no good, or by people that have been persecuted by either the government or the cartels or even their husbands or whatever the case might be. This is the place.
But how big of a cohort of those people are just folks who want to earn more money and send it back home? I mean, I have known, I don't know, dozens and dozens and dozens of folks who were here working illegally over my lifetime. And most of them, you know, we hear everybody comes here for a better life. Most of those people I've known, and of course, all you've got to do is go to certain villages and cities in Mexico, or actually read the press there, look at the foreign, the government statistics. There are tons of people who have no intention of moving here and becoming Americans. They come here and they work, and they may work here for 20 years, but the whole idea is they send money back home. And the family's living very well because the difference in value, you know, in purchasing power, they live very well. I love Mexico, you know. They live very well there on a lot less money than you could here. And so that's sort of the Obrero, you know, World War II deal to have farm workers because American men were being shipped overseas to fight, and we had a shortage of labor. Europe has tried this. That's the idea of letting people just come on a work visa and then leave. But there's a legitimate argument here that you're taking jobs away from Americans. The labor unions were always, the Democrat Party used to be the biggest enemy of that kind of thing. Things have really changed. Sure. But not everybody coming across, I don't even believe it's a majority of the people coming across are victims of persecution and eligible in any real sense for what asylum is really about. I think most of this is economic migration. And how do these societies ever fix themselves if people leave? Now, if I lived in one, I'd want to leave too. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, I'm sitting here in America and I'm sitting here on the philosophical standpoint, how do you ever fix your society if your best and brightest, your most eager to work people leave and empty out of the society? It seems to me like it's a death spiral for a society.
Well, sure. Most people are going to come here, as you mentioned. There's an economic side to it, and number one. So how do you fix it? Well, we can try to fix the United States and the border policies and the immigration policy until we're blue in the face, but it's not until Mexico and Guatemala and Nicaragua and all those places start really fixing to where their people, they're as proud as anyone else, and they really want to stay in their country, and they really want to thrive in their country, but it's not happening. And that's why a lot of them, they come and work here, and then they send the money back.
But we're not going to fix their culture for them, and that's the John Kerry, Biden, Clinton idea. Well, we'll just send billions of dollars in aid because they keep talking about we've got to fix the root problems of migration. Well, you and I both know where those billions of dollars go. They go in the pockets of the oligarchs that run these countries, who have their children going to school in Switzerland and own homes around the globe and fly around in private jets while everybody else there is dirt poor. I mean, handing out money is not going to fix these societies. But at some point, the United States, don't we have to have a border that is actually enforceable, where it's a legal process for people to come through so that we can actually truly judge whether they're legitimate for an asylum claim or not? I mean, we're just accepting tens of thousands of people a month, and they just say, they've learned asylum. They were told, you know, down on the road, asylum. And so they say that, and they get a court date in Chicago for 3 years from now, and then we never see them again. This isn't America. I don't know how we preserve our culture. This is what people here are worried about. We all get it. All of us in this part of the country grew up with people who were from Mexico. I mean, you know, I went to school with kids who had just come from Mexico. We had migrant folks who were here, people on work visas, people who are here illegally. And we get it. All of us know some of the hardest working people and the best people we know are people from Latin America. The rest of the country's not quite, you know, I mean, we came from Mexico as Texans. I mean, we share a lot of cultural things. But I just don't, how do we maintain this country with millions and millions of people who didn't come here because they get a chill from the red, white, and blue flying over? Sure. The, you know, this is a, it's because we've seen it. See it in Los Angeles where they openly say we're creating Mexico El Norte. We don't want anything to do with American culture. This is dangerous. It's the Balkanization of the United States.
Well, you know, we are in an immigration war. That's what that is.
That's a good way to put it.
America has always taken the war to the people. If you come and mess with us, we're going to go and we're going to fight the war in your ground, in your territory. In the immigration war, America is letting their troops come and get right next door to the border and just wait for that split second to be able to come through. We wait till they imagine a bunch of tanks and just stuff coming to the border. That's what we have. So what we need to do, and this is just my perspective, my opinion, and I think
that's what we want to hear. Tell us what we ought to do.
So we continue to do what President Trump has started. Okay? And we enforce the border. And then we take the war inside the border. We put centers inside of Juarez, maybe in Villa Ahumada or La Ciudad de Chihuahua. We put some, 100 miles in. Now, if you want to come into the United States, you have to go through these places where you're going to get vetted. What are you going to do?
And by the way, for those who don't know, that is how it originally worked and how it's supposed to work. For example, the United States has consulates in these cities, and that's where you're supposed to go apply. And the consulate in Juarez is so large that the State Department doesn't even run the immigration side of it. It's one of the few offices like in Tijuana where INS, you know, the U.S., the domestic version actually runs those offices. So this isn't a revolutionary idea. It's the way it is supposed to work. So you're saying we just expand on that, build larger centers for people to apply for legal immigration where we can work it out there. But the left says that's cruel because apparently people staying in Mexico is, a human rights violation. I've never quite figured this out, but they left Daniel Ortega in Nicaragua, but being in Mexico, which is actually the most prosperous society in Latin America, somehow that's a terrible thing. So we enforce the wall because I think, shouldn't we be able to agree that it's not racist or anti-immigrant to say that a country's not a country if it can't control and enforce its borders, and you certainly don't have the rule of law or safety for your citizens if people are just pouring over in the hundreds of thousands per quarter.
I agree with you. I mean, I have a fence around my house. I got a lock on my door. I don't want people coming in and out unless they're invited. And if that works for my house, then that should work for my city, for my country, for everything. So we enforce it. You come through those vetting places. Now, if you're not coming in with identification or something that you got 100 miles inside of Mexico, whether it's in Tamaulipas or in Coahuila, wherever state you're coming through, then the border shut down. You can't come in. And that's where our border will work. Because now if you're coming in, you're up to no good because we're making it simple. We're just not investing the money.
Brad's interview continues after you hear from our generous sponsors.
What happens if another party responsible for your injury doesn't step up to make your loss whole? How do you go about getting what you're owed for your loss? Ted Liggett and the Liggett Law Group can help get those responsible to actually accept and act on that responsibility. Ted Liggett does it every day with integrity, advocacy, and results. Call Ted Liggett, the heavy hitter, at 806-744-HURT or visit LiggettLawGroup.com. Don't be cheated. Call Ted Liggett and the Liggett Law Group.
My entire trip, hotels, food, transport, and fun for both Isabel and me to Dental Care's Dr. Silvia Zuniga in Costa Rica cost us less than half my lowest dental work quote at home. I'm not alone in learning how much of a do-not-miss opportunity this is. A farmer from Crosby County had dental work needs that would have cost $25,000 here. He went to Dr. Zuniga at Dental Care, a cosmetic dental specialist, by the way, and had all 28 of his teeth crowned, each shaped uniquely for him, and two root canals he needed, all for under 10 grand. He had a great time, went to the Pacific Side beaches for a few days too, and his total hotel bill for the entire trip was under $1,000. Costa Rica is one of the hottest tourist destinations in the world. It's very safe, very easy to get around in, and not expensive to fly to from Texas, including on Southwest. If you want top dental work at affordable prices, learn more about Dr. Silvia Zuniga and Dental Care by clicking the banner at PrattonTexas.com. Finally, having your teeth fixed and beautiful can be affordable and even fun. Bulletin from Allied Compliance Services. The Federal Motor Carrier Administration has established a CDL driver's drug and alcohol clearinghouse, and your CDL drivers must register their individual accounts. Owner-operators, set Allied Compliance Services as your third-party administrator. Employers may manage their own clearinghouse account, and Allied Compliance Services can assist you with management. Set Allied Compliance Services as your TPA and notify Allied. Learn more at AlliedCompliance.com. AlliedCompliance.com.
With the stories that matter, it's your Texas political swami, Robert Pratt, on Pratt on Texas.
I've told on the air many times, Victor, I've been audited by the IRS, and I've also dealt with the Immigration and Naturalization Service, and not just with my wife. I helped people from Hong Kong when the communists, when it was, they were British citizens, British, and then all of a sudden, they're going to be handed over to the brutal communist Chinese. And these were people that had been in the United States a long time. They had gone to university here, had advanced degrees, and all of a sudden, they were frightened to death at being subjects of the Communist Party of China. So I've worked with the Immigration Service. I will tell you, I'd rather be audited any day of the week by either the state comptroller's office or the Internal Revenue Service than I would have to deal with the INS. This is where the reform, the agency, way before this current emergency, before this current ultra crisis, the agency is so sclerotic, and I don't know how to, I can't describe it to people. That's why I use the analogy of an audit being easier. We've got such a broken, it's not, you have to beware when they say broken immigration policy, we need immigration reform. Be very careful, because when the left says that, they mean something very different than what the right. What I've always said in the Republican Party was, we need to fix that agency so that it works and can do things like you're talking about, so that we can actually have legitimate application by people, the right way. So that they can be considered and then admitted into the country legally. But I will tell you, that Immigration and Naturalization Service that we have right now cannot and would not, it's going to drive illegal immigration across a border, even if we spent money on setting up immigration centers and things, because it's just the worst bureaucracy you've ever dealt with, and it's capricious. Some of the people are mean and capricious, and I don't know how to explain it. It's too much, I guess, to solve here. But so you believe in orderly immigration. All right, let's talk about folks like yourself. Reagan gave amnesty. You were what we would call now one of these dreamers. And there seems to be a lot of tear jerking about all these kids that were brought here by their parents. I make an argument. And by the way, I'm not completely opposed to some kind of pathway to legal status. I don't think you ought to have a pathway to citizenship if you came in illegally, personally. I mean, that's just me. It might be green card only. But I wonder about these people, because there is a concept in our common law that says, other people can't benefit from the crime of someone. If your granddad embezzled a lot of money from General Motors, and then later you're living the life of Riley, and they finally found that it was embezzled money, guess what? They take it away. You don't, just because you're innocent of the crime doesn't mean you get to benefit from the proceeds of the crime. And this is my problem with a little bit with the way the DACA stuff, the Dreamers, has been presented. We've heard these kids stand up at University of Texas, at Texas State, all over the state, especially during the Obama years, get in front of the TV cameras and demand things and I'm thinking, who are you? You're not a citizen. You're here illegally. It's one thing to argue for a policy, but they're demanding things that they're owed it, that they have, that it's a, something owed to them by this country. I want you to address that issue, because I think that is a tough issue. And we see big division in polling in the Republican Party on the issue of a pathway. Again, I don't like citizenship, but a pathway to being here legally on behalf of the Dreamers.
Well, and I believe in gratitude, not demands, certainly, and the way this is kind of laid out, these are folks that came in not the right way. They didn't have a permit to come in, but they grew up here. For all intents and purposes, they live within the American society. The question as to what happens with them, and, you know, is it citizenship? Is it just a green card? That's something that really could be debated. I think what they would want is just to be able to not live under the shadows.
The fear of all of a sudden being being arrested and deported.
It is true.
It is true that a lot of these kids, they don't have a country. People say, go to your home country. They don't have a home country. They were children. They don't even know the language. They're not from there. They're from here. Their parents brought them. And it's a tough issue that needs to be solved in the political way. But so far, it seems, Victor Flores, that the Democrats who pandered to them are the ones that don't want it. If you'll recall, President Trump made them an offer. Let's build the wall and we'll have this pathway to citizenship. And the Democrats turned it down because it seems they want to continue to use these people as political pawns.
And they continue to do that. And you know what? One of the things that really upset me, it's whenever the Democratic Party starts talking and has the narrative towards the Hispanic community about the victim mentality, that we're the ones that I want to take care of everybody. It's not happening, and this is not the way to do it. And always presenting a victim mentality to the minorities.
If you study Marxism, it's the basis of all the left. Everybody is a victim of the big unseen, unknown man. You know, the man. You used to hear that in the 70s. The man.
Yeah.
The man's holding me down. Well, what man? What man made you not get up to go to school this morning? You know, what man kept you from graduating from free school? My wife gets angry because in Mexico, you got to pay, even if you're dirt poor, you got to pay to go to high school, preparatory school. It's not free. And she put herself through universities in a place of poverty, working two and three jobs in factories and things. And here that people tell her, well, I can't afford to go to college, or man, it just costs too much. She gets angry because they've been brainwashed with the victim mentality. So many Americans, and it's not just minorities, by the way, but they tend to get the most of it, the worst of it.
Sure. Sure. But yeah, that's one of the things that really kind of gets me going about the narrative of the victim mentality instead of having a narrative of prosperity. The Hispanic community has come a long ways, even since I first came to the United States back in 1980, 42 years ago. I've seen it. I remember when I first came to Lubbock, Texas, where there was some folks that would suggest and will try to tell me that, the Hispanic community, it's looked down upon, and you shouldn't do this and you shouldn't do that. And there's race and all this stuff. But the first 12 years of my life, I lived in Mexico and I didn't understand that. The only thing I understood was, economic disparity, because we're all looked as Mexicans. We're all the same. But then you come into the United States, which is the immigration, country of the world, yeah, is the melting pot of the world. And that's one of the things that, that I was kind of captivated by, that America, it's really arguably one of the places where race is always on the, it's always on top of the list of any political conversation there might be. And it's unfortunate because other countries, that's non-existent, I don't believe.
Well, other countries are racist. Openly racist still to this day. Most societies are far more racist than this society. You know, in America, we can't, this is something that some of these leftists can't figure out, Victor, and that is nobody can make your neighbor like you. You know, that's an issue of God and Jesus Christ and the Holy Spirit loving your neighbor and living a moral life the way God wants us to do. Nobody can make your neighbor like you. But in America, nobody's stopping you from getting up and going to work every day and bettering yourself. Nobody's telling you anymore. They used to tell the black people you couldn't, but we got rid of those old Democrat policies. Nobody's telling you can't go to school and you can't go to a good school and you can't better your life. So there's a tremendous brainwashing of this victimhood. Instead of saying, well, it was just me, I made the wrong decisions. I got pregnant at 15 or 16. I chose not to go to school. I chose not to graduate. I chose this. There's never a reflection on choices made. There's just you're not responsible for that because it's a racist country. This is a war. You use the word immigration war. I would argue that it's part and parcel. I mean, they're hand in glove with the overall communist idea of destroying us from within through division, by convincing people that they are victims, that somebody else out there is responsible for the fact that they showed up to work late, you know, 17 times and lost their job. But that's really where we stand. And I think this is where a lot of people are uncomfortable with the concept. I mean, viscerally uncomfortable with the concept of any kind of amnesty, and why so many in this country, and it's not a majority, but it's a big plurality, who poll for basically, they want to simply round up every single person who's not here legally and deport them. And I think they confuse the movement behind a lot of this with the individual people. And that's not very, very bright. Talk for a moment. We've got to finish up here. Because you and I, we're going to have to do more of these because we didn't even get on a 100-yard field. We didn't get within 90 yards of the things I wanted to discuss and want you to talk about with Republicanism and being Hispanic. But I think we've just talked a lot about the big pressing issue that polls is the number one issue right now, and that's the border. And you said, look, Trump's policy was a good policy. Build a wall, get control over the border, then you can handle people through a legal process. Before we quit, I want to ask you this. What do you say about those who think that somehow that's fundamentally unfair? I mean, given we take in more legal immigrants in this country than any country on the planet does, every year, legally, except. But everybody wants to come here, so there's always millions and millions more who want to come here. There's a whole lot of people out there that call it a racist policy, a xenophobic policy, all kinds of things that we simply want orderliness and, you know, lawful immigration, maybe with annual limits or whatever. Any comment about that? Because that's where it seems so much of the left is that it's just wrong to even suggest that immigration be selective and orderly.
That's just bad business. That's just bad business. Whenever you don't have order, whenever you don't have a way to control your house, control your city, control your country, it's just not good business. And anytime that you actually have the hours posted at my store, I'm open from 9 to 6 every day. People come between 9 and 6. They don't bang on the door at 10 a.m. or they don't try to break in because I have it posted on my door that I am open from 9 to 6. That would apply to immigration, this immigration war that we're in. And we have to take it to them and control our hours that we're open, if you will.
Very good. And when you say immigration war, I think we can agree that thousands upon thousands of these people, granted they're taking decisions upon their own, but they're being used as pawns also by other governments. We know Venezuela is doing what Cuba did in the 80s. They're emptying the prisons and jails and sending those people on the... I mean, we know this now beyond a question. It doesn't mean everybody coming here is bad people. It's still probably a minority of the people, but they all seem to be... If you're a communist government, socialist like Ortega Nicaragua, and you can't feed your people, it seems those societies' solution is we'll just get rid of a lot of the people. And so these these people are being used by the left in this country, and frankly, the left in other countries.
Well, the other countries, Greg, governor from Florida, they're doing the same thing that Nicaragua has been doing now for years. And, you know, just bringing their people to another country. Thank God that Greg Abbott and the governor, DeSantis, they decided, hey, let's do the same. Let's pass it on, especially to this progressive state, so they can understand what we're going through here, and maybe some changes can be made.
All right, real quickly. What about other folks in your organization, the Republican National Hispanic Assembly, in your chapter? We're told by the media that this is so shameful, but when we poll in Texas, even lots and lots of Democrats like this busing thing because they've heard it all. Oh, there's no problem here, whereas in their town here, the shelters are full, the schools are full. It's unbelievable. Is this busing thing... What is this being perceived by people as a big racist, horrible thing like the New York Times would tell you it is? Or are people kind of laughing about it and pointing out that it's showing the absolute hypocrisy of these leftist, wealthy liberals?
We are trying to infiltrate, I shouldn't use the word infiltrate, but I am a board member in LULAC, which is, as you know.
Yeah, I talk
but
about
here in the Lubbock, in the Lubbock, in the Lubbock chapter, I'm part of them. So I see and I hear at least some of the people around here what their mindset is. And in fact, getting some of the national letters from LULAC, and it's always good to see what the other hand's doing, so you'd be well equipped. To your question, there is narrative as to how inhumane it is. Let me tell you, I have a brother that worked as a contractor for the government as a translator in Arlington, where we're bringing some of the people and vetting them, trying to figure out where they come from, who they are. And he said to me, when I visited with him the last time, his name is Orlando Flores. He says to me, you know, there's some people that are truly just scare kids, and they don't even want to be there. And then there's some other folks that you could tell that they're up to no good because they already have tattoos, and you could just tell in their demeanor that these kids are no good. But yet they're coming in and they're being accepted. There's nothing that I can do. I'm just telling you, you know, just by doing the translation and, right. and their demeanor. There are some kids that are really scared that don't even want to be here. And there's some that they have, that they're here for a purpose. They're here to do something. And it's unfortunate, but, the left would suggest that it is inhumane.
Well, the LULAC national president's a crazy guy. I mean, he's a far leftist radical, period. I mean, LULAC itself's got a fight right now to try to depose this guy. But nevertheless, what do you hear, though, from other Hispanics who are in this country? What do you hear? I just want to know, this busing thing, do they think this is pretty clever in showing the hypocrisy of these leftist liberals, or do they think that the busing thing is just some kind of evil, horrible thing? I just on the street, what do you hear from people?
I within the conservative groups, I mean, this is very clever. I mean, right. this is something that probably should have been done from the get-go.
Right. Me too. I think now the more we see it, this is where we should be putting all the money, not on the worthless stuff.
Right. Yeah. So. And then on the other side of the coin, there's some folks that would suggest otherwise. But certainly, within the Latino community, that are conservative, that are Republicans, they feel that this is something that should happen. That way, they can recognize and they can deal with some of the things that the border states have to deal with every day.
Very good. Victor Flores, thank you for taking the long bit of time on this podcast extra. We're going to do another one and just tell more of your story as a great American success story, an immigrant made good in this country. We sort of got off on this political stuff. We're in election season and it matters. And I think it's important to hear the different perspectives. And so we'll do more in the future. Thanks a lot. Appreciate you so very much.
Well, I appreciate you for having me. Thank you very much.
Hear all the great Texas music Pratt on Texas is famous for by listening to the show on the air or by stream. 5 to 6 p.m. Central in Lubbock. Tune to 98.7 FM or 1420 AM on KWBF. In Abilene and the Big Country, tune to 96.1 FM Q Country.